So, now that we're ready for the next 45 minutes of fun and excitement, I'm going to talk to you about implementing knowledge management in nuclear operating organizations. So we're going to cover a number of key elements today. We're going to talk about strategic workforce planning. That's my most favorite subject. We're going to talk about recruiting the next generation, my less so favorite subject. Succession planning for selecting the right, evaluating and developing the right people for leadership, because leadership is very important to nuclear power for any organization. Retaining top talent, we're going to talk about employee engagement. What does that mean? And then we're going to talk about strategies for success. What are the things that you could do in an organization to be successful in any sort of application of knowledge management? These are other practices. So, as a reminder, knowledge management is an integrated, systematic approach to identifying blah, 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 blah. You've heard this a gazillion times already, right? So I'm not going to repeat it. But the primary message is how do you take what she has and put it with him? And what does that really mean? And so that's the basic definition of knowledge management. I'm not quite sure you want everything she knows, but that's another story. All right, so we're going to talk about strategic workforce planning. So this is the question that was asked earlier about this gap between the early 90s and the 2000s. Through 1980 through 1990, most of the utilities in the U.S. for HR were tactical. We were balancing labor budget supplies to headcount. In the United States and other parts of the world, headcounts at nuclear facilities were dropping. There, people were, we went through a thing that's called re-engineering. Anybody ever heard the term re-engineering? So that was the big thing for the 90s, right? So we were finding our way to reduce headcount, become more efficient and more effective. We put little strategic planning on what the talent needs were. HR organizations, we were not involved in managing attrition or workforce planning strategies. And only recently, and I say recently for me is in the last 7 years, have we been really focusing on this as part of strategies for long-term operational success. So, what is strategic workforce planning? It's taking strategic workforce planning, linking it to the financial planning, and then ultimately linking it to the business strategy. Without the connecting finances, the cost of business, or the cost if you don't do business correctly, to the business planning side of it and implementing it. So here's a secret we learned at Palo Verde. If HR comes up with the idea, nobody likes it. But if the business comes up with the idea, everybody loves it. So here's the secret. Don't ever come up with it. Come up with the idea, plant the seed, put a little water on it, a little fertilizer, which means BS. You understand what BS means in English. It's equivalent of whatever. I'm not going to go there. And let it foster, let it build up. And then the line, when the line owns it, when the line takes it on, the business, it's become successful. So that's a very key thing that you think about in strategy. I finally got traction in this space when I got the business to own the process. And I'm going to talk about some of those strategies you might want to think about in your organization. So, we put together a model for strategic workforce planning in the United States. This was primarily a lot of work that I had done. We were spending many years in the United States discussing what is workforce planning. You could ask half a dozen different people what is workforce planning, and half a dozen different people will give you a different definition. And so we realized that we were getting lost in the definition and not effectively implementing the strategy. So the United States came together and adopted this model. And we're going to go through this model. This is a public domain. I made it public domain, and so it can be used by any organization, any part of the world. It's currently managed by the Center for Energy and Workforce Development out of the United States. So it talks about business planning, analytics, development, and metrics. So we're going to go through each one of these phases in some level of detail so you have an understanding, and then I'm going to give you some examples of what those things might look like. So, quadrant one, business planning. This area is designed to answer the following questions. What are the internal and external game changers? What are the things that are affecting your organization's success? Is it problems or challenges with public perception? Is it the price of natural gas? Is it cost of improvement because of Fukushima and changes you have to make? What are the things that are driving internal and external your organization? Because that will affect your knowledge management processes down the road. What are the workforce requirements to address current and future business strategies? So in the United States, we are moving from analog systems to digital systems. And many of you who built plants in the 70s and in the early 80s built analog systems. And now you can't get parts for those systems anymore. If you try to, good luck. So you've got to manufacture those parts internally. And meanwhile, you're developing a strategy to replace those analog systems with digital systems. So it's a different skill set. Number two, what are the new skills or knowledge that you'll be required? When I started in nuclear power, there weren't a lot of PCs. PCs weren't required. So people in the business communicated the old-fashioned way. We used the telephone, right? Now, new technology, the younger workers want to have remote mobile systems. They want to be able to text message each other. And they want to be able to do work remotely and in a different sort of format. That's a different technology. You ever try to implement a wireless system inside a power plant? There's just too much metal. That signal goes everywhere. So it takes a different technology to figure out how to make that happen. Some organizations have been very successful with that. So again, what are the skill sets I need? Finally, where are the new critical jobs that will need to be analyzed? Think about the fact that if you change out your systems, your chemistry systems from analog to digital systems, it changes completely the way chemistry is done. You have so the skill set you needed before about grabbing the sample, sticking it into the old analyzers, turning the knobs, looking for the light differences, it's all done digitally, right? It's a different skill set. So now you're trying to maintain that equipment. It's a different skill set to maintain those digital analyzers than the old analog analyzers. And finally, because of all the new skills that people are going to be learning, how are you going to redeploy and retrain those requirements? So this is a part of the business planning. When you hear others talk about business planning, this is what they're talking about. You have to understand the business you're in. Any questions? Because this is foundational. If you don't understand this, the rest of it is just an exercise. You have to link back to the business success. And in nuclear power, our business is to safely and efficiently generate electricity for the long term. Would you agree? If you're an R&D lab, it's to safely and efficiently create new content and concepts for the long term. That's our job. And if you don't understand how that links back to the business, you've got a challenge in front of you. So that's something to think about. How do you do that? How do you train your new employees to do this? The second piece. This is a piece I love because I love numbers. I know I'm an HR guy. I'm not supposed to like numbers, but I do. So this phase, you're going to document the makeup of your workforce. That is the demographic profile. Analyze the information and determine the following questions. Answer the following questions. Where am I heading organizationally? That means, what's my demographics look like? What's my retirement curve? What's my attrition curve? What's my development curve? Do I understand what that means? And how do I model for that? I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Is the organization prepared for the retirements and attrition? What do I mean by that? Do you know what your retirements are going to look like in your attrition? Do you understand where they're going to occur? Do you know you've got development plans in place to replace that talent? So there's three ways to get talent to an organization. This is going to be simple. This is going to be on the quiz. There's no quiz. You're going to build that talent internally, right? You're going to buy that talent externally from a contractor, or you're going to borrow that talent. That means you're going to go ahead and you're going to use somebody else to get that done for you. But so those are the only ways you're going to get knowledge or skills in your organization. There's no other way to happen. Build, buy, or borrow. Just think of it in that concept. So what am I going to do? Am I going to build? Am I going to buy? Am I going to borrow the talent? What's my turnover in my critical jobs? And why do I have turnover? Is it what I've expected? And can I manage that? Finally, what are my knowledge risks? Who has unique or critical knowledge, and where does it exist? So we're going to spend some time later on this week to talk about how do you assess that risk. It's a simple. It's a very simple process. The application is difficult. The process is simple. Why is the application difficult? You remember we learned earlier, what are some of those challenges you have, the barriers, people's perceptions, leadership involvement. So those are things that you have to work and overcome. And finally, what are my hiring lead times? So remember earlier I talked to you about operators? How long does it take to get somebody to become a licensed reactor operator? How many years is it? 8 to 10 years. So when do you think I need to hire that person? I'm going to need somebody in 8 to 10 years. When should I hire them?
Yesterday.
That's right. Now, leaders, people who run the business, they don't want to spend the money on the talent. So you have to show them that you can't develop those operators any faster. And if you lose critical operators, you lose critical engineers, you lose critical technicians, your performance drops. And I'm going to show you in another presentation exactly how that looks because it happened to us. I will show you the cycle of plant performance. What are the contributors to that? What did it look like? And what did the recovery look like? And you're going to understand that. So that's going to hit right to that lead time because we were not hiring ahead of time. And finally, how long does it take to take an individual from a beginning to that independent, competent worker? How long does it take? Those have to be factored in. So having information to know when somebody may leave, having analytics, projections, models, will help you determine how you want to spend the company resources, because they're very valuable resources. So if you can develop a model that projects losses within a 90% interval of correction, wouldn't that be great? I know with a 90% accuracy that he's going to leave in a certain period of time. And that's how the U.S. industry is starting to model workforce analytics. And the good news is, I'll show you some tools, but there are vendors that do that very, very well. All right, the next thing we're going to talk about is workforce development. What's the organization's internal and external pipeline? What time do I have until 3:30? 3:30 is a break, okay, so I'm going to speed up a little bit. What's the organization's internal and external pipelines for new knowledge and skills? How am I getting people in? Remember, you can't transfer knowledge to somebody if they're not there to transfer it to. So what are my pipelines? Where are they at? What's the organization's succession planning for key leaders? And is it used to fill talent needs? Many organizations have succession plans, but they do not use them to fill their leadership vacancies. So why are they doing it? Why are they spending the energy? So are you using your succession plans? Is the organization's internal development programs designed to train employees in a timely manner? How long does it take to get somebody into the organization, trained up, and out being productive employees? And finally, is knowledge management in place, and does it ensure unique and critical knowledge is captured and retained? So that's what the quadrant is trying to do. So those are the pieces. And finally, execution and metrics. In this particular phase, we're trying to answer, is our forecast correct? Is our hires versus losses aligned? How well is our pipeline program working in terms of quality of candidates? Am I getting the right candidate? Are you achieving the retention of critical knowledge? Are you losing the people that you get in, you're training them, and they're leaving? Are they staying with you? And finally, are you ensuring, this is it, this is what this is all about. Are you ensuring you have the right employee at the right time? It's as basic as that. So, four quadrants, business planning, good analytics, well-defined development programs, and metrics to measure success. It's simple. You have the answer, right? You're ready to go home. You can spend the rest of the day in downtown Tresti and enjoy yourself. All right. So let's talk about managing risk. There are four areas. What are my risk indicators? So think about this in your organization. I know this is not your specialty, but think about this in your organization. What's my attrition rate by job? What's my retirement rate? What's my average age of employees in my organization? Average years of service. Average time to fill a critical job.
average leading training time, and my employee completion rates. These are just simple metrics that you must factor in because these are your risks. If you're very high in these areas, you have a high risk factor. You'll have plant performance challenges. What are my business drivers? You know, from a qualified workforce, process efficiency, safety objectives, effectiveness. What are my risk events? This is where people never can make the connection. Organizations have risk events. They don't link to work, strategic workforce plan or knowledge management, but here they are. This is a secret. Insufficient skill sets or knowledge deficiencies, equipment failures, unplanned outages, oversight, increased oversight regulation. Are you experiencing any of those? Does that sound familiar to anybody? You might be thinking about you've got challenges in these areas relative to talent. And finally, what are my potential impacts to safety, earnings, staffing, performance, standard things? So this is just an example that you could use to look at. And either if you're an evaluator, you can evaluate the organizations you're assessing. If you're an organization, you might as well bet that the evaluator is looking at these areas. So you can work them both ways. So attrition process model, I'm not going to go through this, but you've got employees that go in, employees that go out. You've got, you've got a little model. I put this out there. You'll have it. You can use it if you're trying to figure out how to do this space. And finally, we've got a dashboard. And this is that every year employer should have something that looks like this. This is my age profile, my historical losses, my projections, my demographic information. This is just an example of a workforce planning dashboard. Here's an example that I think tells a lot of information when you look at it. This is an example of an age and years of service graph. Very simple. It's derived from this data right here. So, go back. I hit the wrong button again. It's derived from this data right here. What does this tell you? Here's what it says. I got a lot of old people, and they're leaving, soon. So look at the years of service over here, right? Look at the people in blue. They've been with the organization more than 30 years. Look at the people in orange. They've been between 25 and 29 years. And look at the amount of people from 50 to over 60. And then look at the hiring that's been going on in the back end. Less than 5 years of service, and then 10 years of service. By the way, this is the Palo Verde chart. This is exactly what we look like today. So we have been hiring our replacements. But we have this effect that's going to be going on in the next 5 years. But here's the challenge that I'm seeing, and the thing that worries me, that keeps me up at night. You see this group over 65? That's a challenge, because that group is growing. They're staying. They're not leaving. I want them to go. I can't get people into the pipeline if those people stick around. Don't know how to tell them politely. Time to go. There's a strategy, and it's through performance management. But these people right here with the blue, over 30 years of service, they have full pension. So they're not retiring because one of two things. One, their spouses don't want them home, which is true. And two, this is their identity. They don't know. This is all they know. They've been in the job for 30 years. They don't know anything else. They go home. They don't do anything. Bad things happen. So it's a serious challenge. So as you think about your strategy and you're encouraging people to leave, if you've got something like this going on, you may want to think about strategies to encourage those people to move into retirement. Bring them back as contractors during outages. Let them come back and mentor. Give them an opportunity to be engaged, but get them out of the system so you can use the pipeline to bring talent in, because we have so much money available for payroll. So look at your organization, and this applies to any organization, NPP, R&D, regulator. The NRC looked worse than this, and then they've been hiring, so now they got this big double bump. I'm going to show you a chart later on this week that shows the entire U.S. industry. And I'll tell you, it looks just like this. And it shows movement over a 10-year window. Then you want to do is your forecast by job, by year. So I've developed a probability model for Palo Verde that forecasts loss within a 10% accuracy by job, by person. So I know within a 10% accuracy within the next 5 years who I'm going to lose and where they're going to be at. Now, that is very important information for the business, because now the business is focusing not on replacing a job that somebody just left, but to making sure that they're putting the resources into the pipeline programs. So remember the pipeline programs I showed you? How do I keep that funded? I keep it funded based on knowing what my losses will be for the next 5 years and which are the jobs that are the feeder jobs into the business. So not all the jobs, so people feed into an organization. They feed in from four groups: operations, maintenance, engineering, and you're not going to believe the fourth one, security. Security is a pipeline. They get people retire from the military, they come in and they work in our security department, they get tired of carrying a gun, they have other talent and skills they received in the military, and they go into the organization. So those are our four pipelines at Palo Verde. Ironically, security is a very good pipeline. So we want to make sure those are properly flooded so we can fill our needs. So this is a chart that you can use. You can modify this, you know, create it yourself, but you can see we break down the jobs, we break down retirement, non-retirements, what percent of the population. So now you have data that you can go to your leaders with and say, here's what we should expect to see in the next several years, and here's my risk. My QA department, I'm going to lose 55% of the talent in the next 5 years. That's a lot. The real number is 65%. Of my QA talent in the next 5 years. How am I going to shore that up? Where am I going to get that talent from going forward? I get it from operations, I get it from engineering, I get it from training, I get it from maintenance. So now they have to think about, okay, if I'm going to lose some people to the QA organization, because I got to keep that QA organization well staffed, I have to hire more people into the pipeline. And now you see how the process flows. So having those analytics will help you make informed business decisions on what's the right thing to do. Here's another graph you may want to think about. These segments are departments, but it could be a job family. The blue is operations. The red is engineering. The green is maintenance. Or maybe the green's engineering, the red is maintenance. But you can see that those feeder organizations are the ones that are going to lose the most people in. And then when we project that all the way out, almost 20 years. So we know what the burn-off curve, I know it's a terrible name to use for a retirement model, but what the burn-off curve is for the people who are going to leave the organization out 18 years. So we have an idea what we can expect. So we know we've got to put resources into certain programs for about a 5-year period. Then we'll see some stabilization, and then we'll see a little bit more of a drop-off. So we model that. We look at it every year. We measure how we're doing against our projections to actuals. Then we also have a 5-year look ahead. And this is just an example of the types of groups. And then we do a job feeder analysis for some of our jobs. How do we get people into jobs? This is something you want to think about for your critical jobs. So where do they come from? First of all, you want to look at your training programs. This is just an example for electrical technician. 50% of this group comes from training programs, from in-house apprentices, colleges, tech institutions. Mid-career hires. We talked about the challenge for that. In this case, only 25% are coming from mid-career, because they're not there. And then another 25% from other jobs within the organization. Understand how your jobs are being fed, your critical jobs. Know where they're coming from so you can make informed decisions on the type of staffing that you need. These are standard analytics that you should be doing in any organization, regardless of where you're at. Okay, all right, recruiting challenges. Recruiting is great, but don't take a guy like me to a job fair. I'm just not the demographic that's going to appeal to young workers. I don't get it, but they tell me I can't go anymore. So what are some recruiting challenges? Competition for talent. The United States economy is picking up. It is not glamorous to work in nuclear power. It's better glamorous to work for Google or Yahoo or Apple. But guess what? Those jobs are they turn quite a bit. People don't stay in those organizations. It's a cutthroat business. So we manage through developing pipelines, developing people, and we show them these things. And I'm going to show you a video later on this week of interns and their project. I want you to assess kind of with the knowledge management tools that they've used. I'll show you later. Graduates into technical fields, into nuclear power. Nuclear industry has a high degree of qualified needs, so there's a lot of hurdles to process. Identifying enough qualified candidates who can successfully pass the hurdle. In the United States, we do what's called Edison Electric Institute tests. It's called MOS and POS. They're for maintenance and operations. And those tests are kind of difficult to take. And so you've got to score at a very high level. For us, it's top decile for maintenance and top quartile for operations. Those are our cutoffs. We only want the best of the best to work in nuclear power. Don't want guys like me operating the control room. That would not be a good thing in the long run. It would be fun for the short while, but not a good thing. So, recruiting tools, websites, media, universities, networking, external recruiting firms, employer referral programs, and positive branding. Let me tell you what really works good. Here's how you recruit people in this business. You take the youngest talent you just hired, and you take them on the recruiting trip to the colleges. And they've already been through 1 or 2 years of your program, and they are excited to be working for you. And they're talking their language with the students that are coming out. It works great. So I told you I'm not the demographic for the recruiter. I never understood why I went to job fairs. Nobody would ever talk to me. Now I get it. So we don't take people that look like me. We take people that look like her and her and him, and they're the ones that go to the plant, that go job recruiting with our recruiters. So that's a strategy that works. Because you're not going to find those mid-career professionals. They don't exist. There are very few numbers. So I'm going to talk about succession planning. Succession planning begins at the time of hire. Remember I talked to you about that. I'm going to go a little bit deeper in another PowerPoint presentation. But for succession planning, we have a policy we follow. I'll talk about that a little bit. We do a 9-block assessment. And I'm going to show you a different way of how we do 9 blocks and let you kind of think this through. And we do mentoring and rotation programs, and I'm going to talk about mentoring in another PowerPoint. So the leaders go through and they do a whole talent readiness assessment. How many years now? Are they ready now for the next level? 1 to 5 years, 1 to 2 years, 3 to 5 years, and so on and so forth. So we have a 10-step process. I wish I had thought about a 12-step process of recovery, but we did 10-cent. We get our chief nuclear officer expectations. We link it to the performance management. We utilize some type of leadership competencies. We have Lominger competencies. We have 10 of them. We evaluate all leaders against those competencies. So if you don't have leadership competencies, something to think about. It's very important because you want to be able to evaluate your leaders against competencies that are proven to be successful. Conduct some sort of leadership competency assessment. Establish an independent individual development planning. Make sure they're doing it. Understand what they've got. Do a 9-block assessment on potential and performance. Establish accountability process. And evaluate results. So, here's your traditional 9-box. It's really boring, right? The guy up here on top, right here, he's a high performer. The guy down here, he's a low performer. And everybody, when you do one of these things, you see a lot of people, they just kind of fall in the center. Has anybody ever done one of these before? You ever seen one of these? Anybody? So when you do it, where do most people fall? Right here, smack in the center? It's amazing how that works, isn't it? Everybody's average. A couple of guys on top, a couple of guys on the bottom. So let me tell you what we do at Palo Verde. I didn't come up with this process. Our chief nuclear officer came up with this process. So what did I tell you again? HR architected, line implemented. He believes he came up with this thing wholeheartedly. It's his idea, and he swears to it. I'm happy with that, but I have the original artwork, so I know where it came from. So these are zones. We said, wait a second. The 9-box gets us halfway there. But since everybody falls in this center block right here, what's a better way of evaluating talent? So we break up using these zones based on potential and performance, and we slot people within the box and then within a zone. There is no tool out there on the market that does this. We do it manually, and we track it manually year after year after year, and I'll show you how we do that. So it's easy to find a 1. It's easy to find a 9, somebody who's new is over here. But when you get these people slotted, now you know trajectory where they're at. So if somebody was in a zone three, in a five block, where were they? That's year one. In year two, are they up here? Are they down here? They're still in zone five, but are they moving upward and improving? Or are they moving downward? So we spent a lot of energy and time discussing those finer attributes of leadership. How is this person doing? I'm going to not spend too much time on the zones. You guys can look at it. But basically, zone one means you're not very good. Zone three means you're okay. And zone five means you're doing great. Those are basic sort of things. Very, very fancy stuff. So let me show you how we plot this, because this is really good on talent management. So employee A was in category five, but zone three, and he moved or she moved to zone two. I don't know the name anymore. Here's an employee who went from zone five, box five to box seven, but yet stayed in the same sort of zone four. So they're still a pretty good performer. They're getting better on their performance, but their potential's going down. Look at that, going down. So they're not quite as strong as they used to be. They're getting better at it, but this is all they do. Here's an employee who is new 1 year, and now he or she's moving up, and their performance is improving as a leader. Here's an employee who went from an eight, still an eight, but in that higher zone. Here's somebody who's a high potential. Here's somebody who is moving the wrong direction. So, now you can get ideas. So here, you got three things. Wrong direction, employee's going the wrong way. Employee's going the wrong way. Employee's going the right way. Employee's kind of mixed. Employee's going the right way. Otherwise, normally, people have been, oh, this guy's still a four, so no change. In reality, he's really starting to drop his performance. So this is a methodology, something to think about. So if your organization is using a nine box, challenge them on where they're at in that box. Are they high in the box, low in the box, middle of the box? Because it will help you define directionally how leaders are being performing in talent. It will help you. It will help you in the long run decide who gets promoted and who doesn't. And then we put them into a succession planning process. We use success factors at APS. This is just an example. So retaining top talent. I want to spend a little bit of time. So Rosa Tom presented to you an operating model. You saw the operating model, right? You saw the structure, the interfaces, the departments. At Palo Verde, we have a leadership model. What's different between a leadership model and an operating model? A leadership model talks about how leaders lead and how the business is going to operate from a leadership philosophy and operational perspective. And in that leadership model, we focus on these red boxes. It says the first box is employee engagement. First is safety, generation, operational focus, and cost. That's fundamental. Then we have employee engagement, plant equipment, people. What an interesting concept. Problem identification resolution, safety, and knowledge and training. Notice it doesn't say knowledge management. It says knowledge and training. Why does it say knowledge and training? Because we are a continuous learning organization. Simply put, knowledge management is effective knowledge and training. It's continuous learning and evolving. Knowledge is fundamental. Share it. These are our principles, our philosophies. We build programs behind this. We want to be top decile in the industry in the area of knowledge and training. That's a goal of ours. And we do that by the way we implement training. So, philosophies. So we focus on employee engagement. Without employee engagement, you have some challenges. You have three types of employee engagement. You have leader engagement, engaged leaders, engaged employees, and an engaged thinking organization. Now, you guys heard that term before, engaged thinking organization? Comes right out of IMPO SOER 10-2. That's a standard in the U.S. that came about as a result of David Bessie and almost blowing a hole through a reactor core. So, what do these attributes look like? Continue to learn your profession for a leader. Explain the whys and transfer the vision. Build trust and relationship. Employees, be empowered. Desire for excellence, sense of community. and an engaged organization is think beyond the procedure, find issues before they find us, be engaged and thinking in every task. So these are our attributes. We look at this. We derive this. And we do this through employee network groups. So it's interesting. I saw Rosatom has a new generation in nuclear. So does the United States. And our version is called the Palo Verde Young Generation Nuclear, but we have other sort of employee engagement groups. And our vice president says, we don't want thinking, engaged employees, but if our employees don't understand how the business works, what are they engaged in thinking about? It's back to business planning. So, how to retain top talent? You pay them really, really well. No. Okay, maybe. Branding, the right environment. Having an having a leadership model that everybody's engaged to is a great retention tool because employees are trained on that. They go through an accountability process. We use what's called the Oz principles. See it, own it, do it, solve it. Employees understand that and they take ownership. Leaders are evaluated on how will they perform in that space. Provide challenging assignments. So for every time there's a critical evolution, there's at Palo Verde and at your power plant, there's an experienced worker and then there's somebody new. Without a doubt, we do not do any evolution unless we blend those two together. Because that's the way how we transfer that knowledge that we don't know if we're capturing. They learn by experiences. Recognition, competitive salary and benefits. Notice that's at the bottom. But it's having a good reputation. So finally, strategies for success. We implemented at Palo Verde a concept called the People Health Committee. Interesting concept. Now, what is that? Every MPP has a process called the Plant Health Committee that looks at system reliability of systems. The People Health Committee looks at people reliability of the people programs. And guess who came up with that idea? It wasn't me. It was the site vice president. Again, HR architected, line implemented. They love this. So what do? We monitor people programs. We have a procedure. You know, if you're nuclear power, you have to have a procedure. You can't do anything unless you have a procedure. High-level review of people key performance indicators. Alignment around people initiatives. And finally, assessment of organization on how are we doing it with our programs against the people. So here's examples of quarterly topics. We meet monthly. You can meet quarterly. First quarter, we like to cover these topics. Notice we've got things in here. They're all people generate workforce planning, succession planning. Then we get into second quarter. We talk about performance management. K-18, our knowledge transfer and retention updates. We're assessing how well we're doing. Are we identifying our unique and critical knowledge? Do we have the right plans in place? Are we being successful? Selection process update. Third quarter, we talk about these particular items. Again, status of staffing, performance, mentoring nominations. And then finally, we do a year-end review. Get some idea. Job rotations, diversity update, and how are we doing? So these are examples, our quarterly examples that you know for our People Health Committee. It is an industry best practice in the U.S., and a lot of companies are starting to follow this particular subject because it focuses on talent management at a very senior level. So elements of knowledge management. You heard today people, process, technology. You're going to see this slide in a different presentation. But as you're looking at your processes in an organization, think of it in these categories. What do I do for people? What are my people programs? What are my process programs? And what are my technology programs? Think of them in that category. And if you don't have these, you got to think about it. So here's an example. Orientation programs, teaming programs, mentoring and sharing programs, performance standards, training programs, community practices. Those are all people things. What about process? Process maps. We heard that already, haven't we, today many times. Document flows, work standards, knowledge risk assessments. We're going to talk about that in the next couple of days. Technology, we've been talking about databases, wikis, data mining tools. You've got to have some place to stick the data. It's all of these collectively together that creates a knowledge management approach. So you've got a leadership model that talks about your philosophy of learning and knowledge in an organization. then you have three things: strategic, tactical, and process driven. And that creates your knowledge management continuum, all under the auspice of learning and knowledge. So, strategies for success. Institutionalize your process. Make it be part of the business, the fabric of the business. Create guidelines and procedures to ensure sustainability. Have objective evidence that your programs are working. Measure it. We've heard all these before. Measure it. Benchmark others to make sure you're doing a good job. And finally, you're getting the results that you want. These are the objective evidence on how you can demonstrate that your programs are being effective. So, components to a competent workforce, effective workforce planning analysis and knowledge risk assessment, robust succession planning and employee development program. It's only three things. You have to just do these three things and you've got it all set. Engage employees aligned with the organizational goals. That's it. Those are the three things. Simple enough? You can go out and do it today? So when you make a decision, you must think seven generations out. This is a quote from this particular Indian tribe. So think seven generations out. So think of what John talked about with Sellafield, right? They're thinking seven generations out. The Indians were thinking about that long time ago. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Questions here. How do you evaluate employee engagement, and what are your KPIs for employee engagement?
So right now we're doing an employee engagement survey, and we're using that as a gauge. But we also, every year, we do a safety culture survey, and we measure it that way. We also measure it based off of retention rates. So hard evidence is your turnover rate, your retention rate, your growth rate. So those are the three measurements that we use. So retention, some sort of survey, and we link it back to safety culture.
You mentioned when you had this clock and you mentioned that you had quarterly or I don't know what. You always say we. Who is we?
We. That's very, thank you. So we is, I'd love to tell you just me, but we are the vice presidents, engineering, operations, regulatory affairs, op support, director of QA, the human resources people. It's the senior leadership team of the organization. That's the we. It's not just HR. It is the people who are making the business decisions. HR is just facilitating it.
Questions? No? Okay, right. We're ready.
Thank
very
you.
Clear, very comprehensive. Thank you very much.